Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm Jody, and today I am bringing you the best and best of the worst moments from 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days, Unexpected, A Little Teen Mom 2, and of course, Married at First Sight. It has been a very busy week in my neck of the woods because I'm actually heading out to the LA area on Friday to meet up with some of you amazing listeners on Friday night. If you want to hang out, have a drink, it's 7 p.m. in Irvine. I posted details in the Facebook group, The Orchard of Snark, and facebook.com/realityvpod. Just look at the top and you will see all the details. Please do not be shy. I promise I'm not as mean in real life. I don't bite unless, of course, there are some delicious appetizers in front of me. So that's Friday night. And then on Saturday, I'm meeting up with Troy from Taste of Reality and Danny Pellegrino of Everything Iconic in an attempt to, I guess, survive the Real Housewives of Orange County Ropes course, and then we're heading to the Quiet Woman later. If you want to join me on the Ropes course, please let me know. It's $20. You just got to let me know ahead of time. But if you want to just go watch, that would be wonderful too. You can cheer me on, convince me not to quit. That's just $3. You can watch and laugh your ass off. I promise you will have plenty of stories to walk away with because I'm actually pretty terrified. Again, details are facebook.com/realityvpod. But if you can't make it, you're not in LA, you're not in California, I totally get it. Keep an eye out on Instagram and Twitter at realityvpod for little live action highlights, which I'm guessing will probably turn into more of a proof of life. Lastly, before we get to Before the 90 Days, let me very briefly explain about Patreon since I've gotten quite a few questions and DMs about it. Patreon is the place to go if you love this podcast and you want to keep it a weekly podcast. It's what keeps the lights on here, the software running, and allows me to make this podcast my full-time gig because, you know, I'm not a big shot getting paid by a network or big advertisers. So to support the podcast for only $1 a month, you get this podcast that you're listening to right now, all the weekly podcasts earlier in the week delivered right to your podcast app where you're listening right now. You won't have to wait till Thursday. And for just $5 a month, you get those early episodes and weekly bonus episodes and, oh, I'm not done yet, all the previous bonus episodes and content. I think there's about 40 episodes right now. Now, if that were not enough, you also get an invite to our Patreon member only secret Facebook group. It is different than the Orchard of Snark closed Facebook group, and I promise I make it worth your while. For those bonus episodes, like I said, I think there's about 40 episodes that we're at right now. We talk about all the other shows that are on TV, Real Housewives, also some documentaries that are on HBO, Netflix. I've had some fun guests come on. I talk about my surrogacies, Munchausen moms, oh, a whole slew of things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So check it out. I really, truly appreciate it. I appreciate the support of Reality TV. That is patreon.com/realityvpod, or just click on the links in the show notes. All right, let's do it. 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days, starting with Angela. Angela describes meeting Michael for the first time as, quote, just the most beautiful experience. Well, I guess some people like to think of perhaps the birth of their child or watching a loved one, someone close to you, get married as a beautiful experience. But no, not Angela. She just likes the thrill of seeing fear in a man's eyes as she wrestles her way on top. Now, the next morning, they're going to meet his mom. And I don't blame Angela for being nervous or fearful. I think every man and woman in a relationship has that moment where you meet the parents and you're hoping that they approve of you. But when you're Angela, I mean, you have every right to be absolutely terrified. So she gets there and we learn that Michael's mom is more, maybe not as judgmental of Angela about how she looks that we know of. It's more about Angela being wealthier than Michael and she prefers a wife that is going to be obedient to Michael. Now, that did trigger the little feminist fury in me, but I understand, much like I actually think Angela understood, that it was purely just a cultural difference. I was really surprised that Angela kept it in check when Michael's mom refused the Our Father purse. I was offended for Angela, but like I said, I'm not her biggest fan based on that Maury Povich show, but I gotta give her credit that she didn't lose her shit and she wasn't completely rude in front of his mom. Now then we get to the gun comment and the gun control in America. Again, you know me, I'm a liberal. I'm not going to go political here because I like to keep my reality TV light and fluffy and not too deep. But man, I just can't help but wonder, have their opinions of their idol and mentor, Donald Trump, changed? I will just leave it at that. So moving on, Angela, Michael, Mother Michael, and Mother Michael friend sit down and they have a little moment. Hello, how are you? And then the snails come out. I have to believe that producers, they set that shit up. They want a goddamn it, Larry and what's her face, Jenny. They want an as in a Nicole scene. They live to give us, and thank God for it, those scenes where the stupid Americans won't eat the food. But Angela, she surprised me. She doesn't want to eat the snails, but she goes in for it. It did look a little mealy. It looked a little chewy. It looked like something I would have to gag down myself, but she did it. However, she didn't swallow it. Instead, she turns to Michael and says, "Michael, kiss me. Michael, kiss me. You have to take this out of my mouth." So she kisses Michael, and like a freaking baby bird, she spits the snail into Michael's mouth. I mean, what kind of baby bird fetish does this woman have? And way to knock down that stigma that you think everyone has of you being a mother or grandmother. What better way to prove it to them than by feeding him as if you are a mother bird? The only question I do have, the sick part of me needs to know, do you think that snail took on a bit of the menthol and nicotine aftertaste from Angela? I just have to wonder because Michael was pretty offended by her smoking later. Just putting that out there. So does Mother Michael enjoy Angela? Well, aside from the food, she likes her. Okay, fair enough. Well, they leave the house and down come Michael's friends. And again, Angela blows it. As much as she wants to dispel this older woman thing, it's the first thing she talks about. Because as friends come down and she says, "Oh, well, how old are you? Are you the same age? Oh, you're older? Well, I'm older too." Way to draw attention to the exact thing that you don't want people to notice. I got to give her credit, though, at this point, too, that she asked the right questions to the friends, because before she will even let Michael answer or send him like a little clue, she asked the friends if there is indeed a law or a rule in their town that Michael cannot have a photo of her on his phone. Now, she doesn't necessarily believe the friends 100% when they say, "Yeah, you can't have that on there because I think that you're going to be scamming people." Good for her for asking. Now, you know, I did a little research myself and I didn't find the information I was quite looking for, but I did find information about, it was some article, I should have wrote down the source, but the article is called 11 Things You Can Get Arrested For in Nigeria, something like that. And it said there's something called a 419, I believe, and that is about having evidence on you of perpetrating a money scam with people overseas. So perhaps where he lives, there is something where if you have photos of American women or women from overseas on your phone, they are perceiving that and they're assuming that that would be because of scamming purposes. And for that, thank you, country of Nigeria, because we have seen way too many Dr. Phils on that. Later in the day, they make their way to the marketplace. I thought it really reminded me of when I was traveling in Eastern Africa. I loved the little markets like that. Brought back a lot of really good memories. And what better way to immerse yourself in the culture? So I was loving it. I was hoping that Angela was going to enjoy it and respect it just as much. But of course, she doesn't. She doesn't seem too happy about going out and about with Michael. I don't know if it's because she is hot and horny and she just wants to get it on in the hotel, or if she's just tired. It's probably having to do with her nicotine withdrawal, I'm sure, as we saw, because she damn near lost her cool on Michael. I really thought that she was just going to come out swinging punches at him. I don't think that he should have gotten in between Angela and her cigarettes. She's trying to quit. She probably should have started earlier instead of going cold turkey on a flight to Nigeria. But, you know, we're too late for that. It was a bad look for both of them to be fighting in public. And I think you really have to be careful when you are the outsider, the tourist in a different country. You don't know the culture. So to be picking a fight in public is, I don't want to say it's dangerous. It's just not smart. Although, I mean, are we really thinking that Angela's a genius? No. Okay, so let's go back into the marketplace and they go to that dress shop. I probably could have spent hours in that place. I probably would have bought the whole thing out. I thought it was incredible. But Angela is not seeing it that way because she's self-conscious. I know many people don't agree with that and they thought she was being really mean and harsh. I agree with that. I don't think her tactic of smacking him across the face was called for or something you would do to someone you are falling in love with, supposedly. But I understand her actions really came from a place of feeling incredibly embarrassed. It's not just she and Michael, or is it her and Michael? Whatever. In the market, it's not just the shop owners and the two of them. It is an entire camera crew. And I'm sure behind the camera crew, there were other people from the town and the marketplace watching this all go down. And to be in that store and know that nothing is going to fit you, I have been that girl. It is uncomfortable. The last thing that you want to do when you are not feeling good about yourself, whether it's you being overweight or a bad haircut or whatever it might be, you don't want an audience to it. You don't want to draw attention to it or explain it. Any of that. So I understand why Angela was having what looked to be on the verge of maybe not a panic attack, but just a complete breakdown. All right. So yes, she smacks him across the face. I think she looked like a complete beast. I was embarrassed for him. And speaking of embarrassment, let's go on to John and Rachel, because boy, oh boy, I was embarrassed for them when they were asked about whether they had chemistry on their first night together. I don't ever want to know about other people's sex lives unless it's out of like a weird, bizarre curiosity that I'm fan fictioning out, but I don't need to know about these two. I want to think of John as my little English teapot, short and stout, and I want to think of Rachel as like a good mom who knows how to sing. Seems like John's sister Abby would like to think the same thing because she is about to make her debut, and of course, she is our voice of reason, our vor. Rachel and John make their way over to Abby's house, and Abby seems to have the reputation in her family as being like head bitch. She just tells it like it is. It's her way or the highway. I think Rachel is really, really smart. I think she has watched enough romance movies, enough rom-coms, to know that if she wears the right thing, she may be able to psych out our voice of reason, Abby. Because what was she wearing? A kitty Christmas sweater. Oh, yes. I mean, what better thing to wear? To convince someone that you are just sweet and demure, you have no bad intentions for their brother, than a kitten Christmas sweater. So here she comes. She walks in the door. She greets her with a big hug. I think she took Abby off guard, to be honest, because what are you going to say to someone who's hugging you in a kitten sweater? So alas, they sit down in the English parlor And the first thing out of one of those little English kids' head is, you look pretty. I mean, if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. The British do it better, even their children. But Abby, despite her pretty children sitting in the parlor having a spot of tea, not pushing their pram around, she is no bullshit. She tells John, you know, I've never seen you as a family man. Have you ever dated anyone with children? And he says two. And then she does this like, no, let's correct that. It's actually been one. Now, despite all of that, Rachel is being what I think is just patient. She knows this is a lot for John's family to take on, and she's really keeping her cool. Gotta give her credit for that. She could have gotten very defensive, and she did a little bit, but she worded it kindly. She knows they all think that they're in the honeymoon phase and that things are going to be wonderful forever, but she assures them that for now, she has no intention of leaving John, and she hopes they're together forever. And it's at this point that John is holding Lucy, and he nearly drops her, to which Abby says, oh God, he just dropped the baby. I mean, even child endangerment just sounds lovely when they say it. Well, let's fast forward to tub time, which was an epic failure. There's water all over the place, which begs the question, why didn't they just bring her downstairs and bathe the baby there? Oh, I would have been having a panic attack, but no, they truly are in the honeymoon phase because neither of them are yelling at one another. You know, in a normal relationship that have been together for more than 3 days, there would have been an all-out brawl. But no, these two just giggle it off, clean up the flood, and then they move on to this conversation about what Lucy's going to call John. I could have sworn they had this conversation before where John was on Skype and Rachel was saying like, oh, there's Dada or something like that. Maybe I was just imagining it. I thought that they had this conversation and it was just already a done deal. But no, now John is saying that he's having second thoughts. He feels like it would be wrong for Lucy to call him dad because he had some messed up childhood and he doesn't think a title matters. And then all of a sudden, Lucy's like, Dada. And then it got really awkward because Rachel's like, oh, I think she just said Dada. Well, no shit. I'm sure Rachel has been teaching her Dada, even if they hadn't decided on it. So of course she's saying Dada, or she's looking at the window and sees a plane and she's like, ah, Dada, because God damn it, that's what babies do, right? They just go, da-da-da, ga-ba-ba. I've had two of them. I know how it works. Okay, anyway, let's go on to Ricky and Melissa because holy shit, it was a level of delusion I have rarely seen. Ricky in this episode was probably like I was in high school and college with my complete cluelessness how the other gender works. Okay, or is it sex? Sex, gender. I don't want to use the wrong noun for it, adjective. Okay, now I just don't even know what I'm talking about. It's 90 Day Fiancé. I lose all sense of smartness when I'm watching. Anyway, Ricky and Melissa. All right, so she was 2.5 hours late for dinner. He is under this delusion, much like defarter, that he had a great time with Melissa, that they really hit it off, and he has dressed himself head to toe in camouflage and plans to spend the day out in Medellin with Melissa. So many things wrong here. First, of course, that is that he's dressing in full camouflage. Now, I only know Medellin from what I've seen in Narcos. And based on that, I would not want to be walking around in full guerrilla warfare gear in Pablo Escobar's neighborhood. I'm just throwing that out there. I know that that's probably a very ignorant statement, but I'm just, you know, better safe than sorry, okay? So he's in the camouflage. He's heading on out. He's looking at the mountains. He's drinking coffee. Hold on a second there. I have to make a comment about the coffee before I go on because it really bugged the shit out of me. He's drinking this coffee saying it's the best coffee he's ever had, the best coffee in all the land, all the world. I promise you, Ricky is one of those people that goes on vacation and then all of a sudden they become the ambassador for that location. They think they know the ins and the outs of the culture, everything about it. You know those people, they go on a cruise to Aruba. And then all of a sudden, they know everything about it. And it's like, okay, you got off the boat to go scuba diving. Don't tell me you know about their imports and exports and, you know, their wedding traditions and all that kind of bullshit. He is definitely one of those people, especially because I swear I saw him mixing instant coffee. All right, so I got the coffee rant off my chest. Oh, okay. So he goes out into this neighborhood, full camo, weird camo striped shirt, some sort of thing on his head, and of course the fanny pack. I mean, how could you make head-to-toe camo look worse? Strap a fanny pack on it. We figured it out. It's like the how many licks does it take to get to the middle of the Tootsie Pop? How do you make camo look worse? You strap a fanny pack around it. So he's meandering his way through town, and his plan is to wait to hear back from Melissa, because although they're going to have coffee and camo shopping time together that day, she's blown him off because she said she has university homework and she's going to be a nurse, so he understands. He is still in La La Land. He thinks that they are going to get married. He's planning to propose. So he walks around this town square. I think he's just doing laps all day because it looks like the same location. He's taking selfies of himself with the church in the background. Oh my God, so uncomfortable to watch. And then, oh, what do you know? It's evening time and he still hasn't heard from her. He goes and gets something that I've seen on my donut Instagram, because I follow some donut sites on Instagram because, you know, I love donuts. And it's like the Colombian donut, which looks like these little wafer things that we eat in the Polish culture. It wasn't a donut. A donut's got to be round and soft and sugary goodness. But anyway, it looked delicious, but I don't think he's really enjoying it because womp womp, Melissa's not there. Oh, you know what I just thought of? I think I forgot about the friend that he called up. Bumblebee, Bumbo, whatever his name is. Someone's going to remind me. I can't remember what his friend's name is, but I love him because when Ricky called the guy up, I feel like that guy was all of us because he just starts laughing at Ricky. But the story Ricky gave him is so far off from the truth. So his friend is telling him, you know, man, you came all the way down here and she goes to kiss you and you turn your head, because Ricky told his friend that Melissa was into him, but he was the one who wanted to take it slow and was like, whoa, slow down there, horny girl. I'm here for love. No, he was just so blinded by excitement or hormones or something. He didn't see that Melissa wanted to get the fuck out of there just as quickly as I want Ricky to get out of there. Now, next week, it looks like Ricky was talking to some other girl on this app that he's going to call over for a little Medellin booty call. So let's stay tuned for that. Now, who should we talk about next? Ooh, how about some Darcy and Jesse? Wow. This guy is a sociopath beyond any and all idea of what I had him as a sociopath before. He really is evil. Darcy, however, is still thinking that he's going to propose on this trip, which just blows my fucking mind. Nothing Jesse has told her that we see would lead anyone to believe that. She makes one small comment about folding up a piece of pizza and eating it like a New Yorker, and this fucking asshole takes it as a personal insult and says, that's not etiquette, babe. Yeah, okay, well, Jesse Von Trapp, etiquette is not wearing a Burberry knockoff scarf with a blue too tight business shirt. I started wondering if perhaps his clothes were the reason why he was so uptight, because his clothes are so tight. The dress pants, the shirt, later when he's wearing the white jeans, everything is so freaking tight that I think that's why he walks with the military gait. That's why when he sits down, he has to sit very erect, because if he's slumping over like a normal person does, his stomach rolls would, well, I guess he doesn't. Well, no, he does have some stomach rolls. We talked about his physique last week. I'm just throwing it out there that perhaps the reason why he is in such a bad mood all the time is because his clothes don't fit. We've all been there. Tight pair of jeans, ugh, worst day of your life. Now at this dinner, which should be an amazing night, I mean, good food, no kids around, it goes south really quickly, starting with that folding your pizza comment. And then Jesse says about this picture of Darcy's kids and him that it's a really good picture and that meeting her daughters was, in his words, quite significant. Now, I think Darcy kind of took that as a compliment, but I wouldn't describe meeting your new partner's kids as quite significant as necessarily a good thing. It's just making a statement. But Darcy wants to know if he's going to post it on Facebook, and she wants to know where on Facebook and which picture, which angle, which is a little weird, right? But Jesse doesn't take it as weird. He takes it as DEFCON 9. Don't know what that means, but it sounds very intense and something that Jesse would say, because he doesn't even want to talk about social media, if you don't mind. Okay, slow down. Just because there's not a candle on the table for you to calm down and connect with your twin flame, don't take it out on everyone else. Calm the fuck down. Then somehow it blows up. I tried going back and putting my finger on what was it, what comment made Jesse mad, what comment made Darcy mad, but there is no reasoning to it. They're both right in that respect, that there's no reason why one or the other loses are cool, because it just blows up for some reason, much like Jesse's apartment when he's horny. But anyway, he makes a comment to her about restructuring her thoughts, and I thought that just confirmed what a sociopath he is, because he is the type of person who has the psyche, who can think one thing and just stick to it. He's got a one-track mind, and there's no penetrating that. I'm really not meaning to make a lot of like sexual innuendos, but you know, it's going there, whatever. What I'm trying to say is that he is the type of person where he can block everything else out and he can make himself think and act whatever way he wants to think or act, much like a serial killer can take on a new persona, and that is what they are going to do. I am restructuring my thoughts, and I am following that restructuring of the thoughts. It's very complex. It's very weird. So he's going to go reconstruct his thoughts on the streets of New York. He leaves, and then Darcy leaves because she doesn't want anything to do with it. She puts on her flip-flops. I gotta give her credit for that. Would I wear flip-flops in downtown New York? I'm not so sure. Do you even say downtown New York? You just say New York City. Okay, question for you New Yorkers. Never really thought about it that way, because you say downtown Chicago, but Chicago isn't like Chicago City, like New York City. Anyway, gotta give her credit for a change of shoes. A 3-inch heel is not the most sensible to storm off to your hotel in. So credit to her. Maybe would have done a ballet flat, but who am I to critique the House of 11 founder? Well, fast forward to the hotel, and Darcy goes into the bathroom and she comes out with a robe on, and we see that she's got maybe some jammies on underneath. No, it's not jammies. This bitch crawls into bed with a cold shoulder sweatshirt, still in full hair and makeup. No, you're not fooling anyone. You're not flash dancing it. You are doing this for the cameras. I don't think their relationship is contrived like Carini and Paul, but they love this drama on camera stuff. As much as they say they hate it, they love it. So she goes and she lays down into bed, and then Jesse comes in. Oh my God, I hate this guy. He says to her, "I'm going to go sleep on couch. It's too tense now to talk. We will talk tomorrow." Well, no, he doesn't want to talk tomorrow. He wants to keep this shit going, which is why he stays standing there and he keeps going on saying, "It's sad, you know, I just wanted you to be with me, but we will talk tomorrow." No. Don't keep saying you want to talk tomorrow and then you just keep yapping and moving your mouth and flipping your hair around and taking your scarf off. Well, then he hears Darcy crying. So does he, you know, wait till the morning because it's too tense to talk? No. He goes back in. He walks over to the side of the bed. And I really did get chills at this point, because he kneels down. He takes her hand. She's trying to get some tears out of her eyes, but like her forehead isn't moving because it's so much Botox. So I think the tear production glands in her head just don't work anymore. So I didn't actually see any water come out. But anyway, she's crying. We'll put that in quotes. And Jesse is sitting there and saying, "I love you so much, Darcy. You have no idea. I don't want any of this drama." And then Darcy does the line that we saw in all the previews. "I just want to be loved. Please, I beg you." I mean, does this not just reek of freshman year of film school where someone's writing a script about the love of their lives or some epic love story? Oh, well, you know what? It does, because guess what Jesse says? This is once in a lifetime. I love you, Darcy, wholeheartedly. If this is not reeking of a future Dateline episode, I don't know if we're watching the same show, because I'm telling you, this guy is gonna fucking snap and someone's gonna wind up dead in his apartment and we're gonna be tipped off because he's going to make a huge purchase from a Yankee Candle store. Well, then they spend the night together, because of course they do, because they love doing this shit. So fast forward to the next day, and they're all in babe mode. Ready, babe? Oh, yes, babe. We kissed and made up. Going to miss the city, babe. Getting the Uber, babe. Enough with the frickin' babe stuff. I will never, ever... Actually, I don't really have a nickname for Dave. It's just Dave. But I would never, from here on out, ever call him babe, even on accident. It's just babe is... It's dead to me. Babe is dead. Babe is moving on. R.I.P. babe. Well, then we go on to the car ride from hell. It started pretty innocently, if you could look past Jesse's ripped tee, white jeans, the Cody Brown from Sister Wives semi-ponytail, except he was using one of those headbands that was really popular. I think it was in like sixth grade. So we're talking 92, like 91 to 93-ish, where it was like a comb flexible type thing. If you're a child of the 80s or 90s, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It wasn't a good look for him, but it was a very interesting choice as well. So he looks bizarre. And then Darcy starts talking about how she booked an Airbnb so that she and Jesse could have their own space away from her kids and her sister, which I thought was very interesting considering the fact that the whole reason they're going to Connecticut is so that they could see what it's like to live together as a family. She's like, oh, it'll just be so calm, so free of drama. We could just make dinner and relax and be together. But they're living in an Airbnb, so it is not at her home, not with her kids, not with her roommate, sister, who she owns the condo with. Makes no sense at all. Now, for the most part, up until this point, the car ride is going pretty smoothly. Jesse loves Connecticut almost as much as Evelyn loves Claremont. It was a little scary how much he was obsessing about the creek and the water, and he's gonna sell fish or bike or some shit like that. And then he goes to stretch or crack his back or something, and Darcy moves away and is like, oh, I'll give you a little bit more room because your elbow is elbowing me there. And then he bristles about it and she bristles about it. And then they bring the foliage into it where it's like, hello, don't bring the trees into it because Evelyn does a lot of photo shoots in there and she's going to lose her goddamn mind if you mess up her ethereal forest. And then it just was super awkward. And awkward was actually the word that Jesse used to describe the car ride. But awkward for who? I think it would be most awkward for the driver, who went from the two of them oohing and aahing and, oh, I love you, babe, and our twin flames, to hating each other from the time they got to one meadow to the next. And then by the time they crossed some bridge, they were back to teasing each other about, you make me grumpy, grandpa. No, you make me grumpy, grandpa. I don't want to know about anyone's grumpy grandpa, especially if they are in the Jesse Von Trapp lineage, because it probably got a little dicey there during the World War II years. Just a hunch. Now, then we get to dinner with Darcy's sister, Stacy. And, you know, I feel like I can tolerate one Darcy, but two Darcys, it's too much. I think it would have made anyone uncomfortable. And Darcy, she does overtalk Jesse some, but not enough to the degree that JVP would have to snap at her and be like, I'm still talking. You still do this. Stacy is right. You still talking. He's messed up. He's got a short fuse. Oh my God, I'm killing myself here with all this fire humor. But for real, he does. He's going to explode. He's going to blow up. These two are not meant together. And hopefully Stacy can talk some sense into these two. Now let's move on to Paul and Karini. Paul has chosen another Best Buy formal outfit today. Some khaki Dockers, a blue shirt, a tie. Very interesting in the contrast to Karini, who's wearing a crop top, but they're on their way to go get this marriage license so that they can get married within 30 days. And they're going to have a ceremony in this office space. I thought it was a government office, but turns out it's like a little reception hall. They're going to have the ceremony there so that Karini's family can be there. But this is not the only thing these two have in store. They also want to start a family, or I guess I should say, Karini and Siri want to start a family. Paul's a little taken aback from what he's showing us because, again, you know my opinion is that these two have their storyline all mapped out. I think she's already pregnant at the time that they're taping this. Paul knows it, Karini knows it, but now they have to weave it into their storyline. But anyway, Karini's saying she wants to start a family right now because if they work together, they can have this family and it won't matter that it's so very expensive. Please, Paul. And then he says, all right. Well, fast forward, and it's not all right because Paulie has to call his mommy. He rings her up and he says it's time to face the music and tell mother that they're going to get married there. But of course, that's not going to be all he's telling her. He's going to tell her that they want to start a family too. How does mother take it? Well, mother says, no, we don't talk about that, Paul. No. This really did not surprise me because I think we all know that Paul has a certain type of mother, probably very helicoptery when he was young, always looked out for him. Paul could never do anything wrong, really guarded him and sheltered him too much so that he never experienced society in real life, which is why Paul is the way that he is. So his mom does not approve at all. I think because she's secretly jealous, I think she would like to be married to Paul. And again, every time she says Paul, it sounds like she's saying pa, like she's asking her spouse, who she calls pa, if he approves or disapproves of son Paul or junior brother. I'm getting just a very Waltons incestual vibe, incestual Waltons. I should probably TM that because that sounds like something that would be a ratings hit on TLC. But nevertheless, Karini wants a baby. Paul's unsure, but he's agreed to it. His mom disagrees. And then we get into this shopping scene. It was so ridiculous. I think it was totally played up. Paul wants her to act like she's immature, that she's sleeping a lot, that she's like a teenager. But really, come to find out, it's going to be like, oh, the reason that she was so tired is because she was pregnant and we didn't know. I'm not falling for it. And to be honest, I never thought I would be bored of Paul and Karini's storyline after the scampering up the hill and mugging last season. But I'm bored of them. Yes, it's happened. I think it's time Paul and Karini sail northward down the Amazon or east or west or south or wherever it flows. Now let's talk lastly about Tarek and Hazel. What a dark episode. This was actually very depressing and humbling to watch. It's the morning after the Pillow Fortress, and Hazel and Tarek slept in the same bed, but they did not sleep together. Tarek feels a little weird, feels a little badly about it, and I like him for that. My co-host, Carrie from Moms on the Rocks, she's got some opinions about Tarek that we talk about on a Patreon bonus episode coming up this week. I don't see this certain side of him that she thinks he has. I still like Tarek. But Hazel is still skeptical. I was actually very surprised to see Hazel brushing her teeth in the manner that she was. It is a goddamn miracle her gums are not bleeding like the people at her church were bleeding because she was scrub-a-dub-dubbing her teeth so violently. When they cut to her at the beginning, I thought she was scrubbing the countertop with like a screwdriver and like the grout on tile or something. She was like, but no, she was just brushing her teeth. Maybe they make softer bristles in the Philippines, but I know my dentist would not approve of my gentle elderly gums being scrubbed in that sort of a manner. Past the teeth brushing, they get into, I know it's not a pedicab, whatever you want to call it, to go meet her parents. Tarek barely fits, and I just gotta say, thank God that Nicole or Danielle of Danielle Mohammed or any of our larger Americans, I will put myself in that group, did not find a partner in Manila because Tarek barely fit in that thing, and he barely fit climbing up through the ladders and the trapdoors to get to Hazel's parents' house. I'm not dissing the parents' house. I actually feel very badly for them, and I will talk about that in a minute, but I'm just saying, thank God. Or even Angela, right? Angela in that dress shop was traumatized. Can you imagine if Michael wanted to squeeze Angela into that little thing? She would have probably flipped the thing like Teresa Giudice did on the Real Housewives of New Jersey, just flipped the freaking pedicab with the poor driver in it. So where was I? Okay, I'm flipping through my notes. Oh, okay, so they're going to her parents' house. That rooster on a leash. I wouldn't say I'm not an animal lover. I like animals. I'm just terrified of them. But seeing that rooster on a leash, it made me feel a little bit more comfortable because it wouldn't chase after me, but I felt bad for the rooster. But it also begs the question, who wore it better? Rooster on a leash or May in Morocco on her leash? I'm going to go with May on a leash because she can get out of it. The rooster really had no choice. And May, I mean, I'm sure she can Google something. She's got her iPad in front of her. Like, how do you escape a backpack leash? The rooster is just helpless. So hashtag free the rooster. Now then we get to Hazel's parents' loft. It wasn't really an apartment. It was just an 8x8 room. And man, damn it, we have got it so easy here in the States or wherever you are, Canada, the UK, wherever you're listening right now. This really did bring it all home. Why Hazel would want to marry an American guy. She wants a better life for her. And she even admitted it, that if she marries Tarek, all of her family can be happy because she'll be able to help them out too. And how do you even look at that in a selfish way when you see her elderly parents living in such poverty? Now, the catch here is that Tarek is not religious and her parents are deeply religious, so much so that they want to bring him to their church for service. I really think it was a sincere gesture. I thought it was really nice of them to invite him in, invite the camera crew in. And for Hazel, I feel like so much is riding on it for Hazel to please Tarek, please her parents, and make it all right, not just for her, but for her parents and her siblings and her son, that it's just, it all has to work out for her. And I really hope it does. Now, this church scene was extremely uncomfortable to watch. I have a husband who is not religious at all, and I don't think there would be anything I could do to get him to attend probably almost any church, let alone a church like this. But this is their culture. And as we're watching this together, I roped him into watching it. And I was telling him, you know, but if you look at it as not so much a religious thing, but just a cultural thing, you have to be maybe not believing of it, but just accepting it and just respecting it, which is what I think Tarek did. He just sat there. Even when the pastor or the preacher came over and put his hands on his head, he was like, okay, just going to go with this, just get through it. And come to find out, this ceremony was 6 hours long. The people screaming and wailing and singing and throwing their bodies around. It is probably the best workout I have ever seen. I'm not trying to make light of this or be mean, but honestly, I wonder if that is what helps her family and her community stay so lean, is that they have 6 hours of intense cardio, more than likely every day, every other day. I don't think this is just a, you know, once on Sunday morning kind of a thing. So after the ceremony, Tarek survives and the four of them have this little talk outside on the street. I thought it was really sweet, Hazel trying to translate what Tarek was saying to her parents. I think she did the best that she could. Although I think Tarek was saying, I do believe in God. I just don't attend a church or have an organized religion that I affiliate myself with. I think her parents took the translation more as he doesn't believe in God or he doesn't practice any sort of faith. I don't think that's the case. And if it is, then, you know, that's who Tarek is and Hazel's going to have to navigate that. I really hope for Hazel's sake that it works out for her. I think her mom is actually very pretty. I think her dad is super cute. I just hope it's a good choice, a good fit for everyone. Okay, so scenes for next week. It looks like Tarek's brother Dean is coming in. It is going to get really messy. And I hope that I come out of this still loving Dean as much as I do now. Now, after a quick break, we are going to come back with TLC's Unexpected. Oh, I love the show Unexpected. I cannot get enough of it. I'm so glad it follows 90 Day Fiancé because it's just 3 hours of the most amazing television all week. Now, Laura and Tyler, I'm going to start with, and then we're going to work our way up to Michaela and Kaylin because Shannon gave us a whole lot of stuff to talk about this week. But first, Laura and Tyler. In case you didn't know, Laura's got coleostasis, if you missed it the first 3 or 4 times she mentioned it. Now, after her mentioning it so many times, I thought, well, you know what? I suppose I should probably look it up and see what it is. In a nutshell, in my very non-medical opinion, it's the mother producing too much bile in her system, and then it gets passed on to the baby, and it taxes the baby's liver, and it can be dangerous for the mom and the baby. So yes, being induced at 37 weeks, although to Laura that seems very early, it's normal, and honestly, 37 weeks, yes, it's early, 40 weeks is full term. But we're not talking like super preemie or anything here. I hope, crossing my fingers, that she and the baby are okay. Now, there's still this tension because it's her sister's birthday, and there's a lot of talk about that. The only thing that made me cringe about it, you probably know what I'm going to say, was Laura's dad saying to Anna, "You're kind of low maintenance. I mean, you don't require a lot of attention, so..." I don't think he meant it to be mean. I think he was actually meaning to take some fault in it, saying, yeah, you're kind of low maintenance. You don't require a lot of attention. We really should have given you more attention and given more thought to it. That's what I like to think. I hope I'm right. Otherwise, it was just like a really dumb dad comment to make. So there's all this, okay, we're eating cake and Anna's mad. It was a lot of filler, to be honest. And then they leave for the hospital. I thought it was really weird because Laura just walks out the front door and she's like, all right, bye. See you, mom. See you at the hospital later. And the mom's like, all right, bye. See you in a couple hours. It just seemed very anticlimactic or not a big deal. But what did seem like a big deal were Laura and Tyler together in the car on the way to the hospital, just giggling and laughing. And I guess that's normal. You're excited about going. It's the excitement of the unknown. But it was the laughing and the giggling that gave me more of a vibe of they are excited about this without any nervousness or fear of the unknown, which most of us go to the hospital with. All right, so they get to the hospital. They give us details about her labor and delivery. It really wasn't that interesting to me. She got Pitocin, she had contractions, and then, oh, the baby's born. They named the baby Lucas, and Tyler was grossed out, and it was, quote, unexpected, get it, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, that all the other stuff came out with Lucas. I'm guessing he means the fluid and placenta and all that gross stuff. Sorry, I should have given you a little warning there, but you know what? It is what it is. It's the miracle of childbirth. Welcome to the world, Lucas, you and all your fluid. Well, Laura takes to motherhood right away. She says she felt like a mom and holding her baby for the first time. It was inexplainable and life-changing. And that was about it for this couple. Like I said, it was just a lot of filler with the birthday talk. Now let's talk about Chloe and Max. Oh yeah, Max is back. Back again. I said this last week and I will say it again. I love Chloe's mom. She seems like a very good mom. She's smart. She's nurturing. But she also is not going to take any bullshit. She actually found this high school that's close to them for Chloe to go to during this year that she's pregnant. They have a program for pregnant moms, teen moms, and Jesus, what better of a place to send your daughter where she has got peers who can relate to her and understand what she's going to be going through. We meet some of these girls, they're talking about breastfeeding, and then, oh, hold on a second. Chloe takes out a delicious glazed donut. I don't know where she got this thing. If someone wants to tell me, I think are they in Arizona, wherever they are, let me know, because this thing was like the size of her head. That was not a Dunkin' Donuts size glazed donut. I know my Dunkin' Donuts. I know my donut places. And this thing was, it looked incredible. It's all I could think about. And then I was thinking like, okay, would I have eaten that when I was pregnant? Would that have raised the baby's blood sugar? And then I was like, what the hell am I thinking? It's a donut. Everyone deserves a donut. But yeah, then they talk about breastfeeding and she's not going to, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go on a breastfeeding versus bottle, because I am of the opinion, whatever works for you, whatever works for your baby, you go ahead and do it, because you are the only one who is awake in the middle of the night with that baby. So whatever you want to do, your formula, your breast milk is not going to get your kid in or out of Harvard. Chloe is a little naive to what being a mom in general means, because she thinks she's going to be able to just live her normal life with her friends, even though she has a baby at home. I think she really thinks she's going to wake up in the morning, she's going to give her little sleeping baby a kiss goodbye, and she's going to come home and she's going to have like a little happy baby in an extra saucer. All of us who are mothers know it's not going to work that way. And Max is even more delusional than Chloe, because he says when the baby's born, he's going to go what he calls savage, and he's going to set alarms for himself, multiple alarms, in the middle of the night so that he can get up and take care of the baby. Well, first of all, moron, you don't set alarms to go wake up your baby to like play and feed in the middle of the night. The baby will wake up and it will be crying. And trust me, trust the millions and billions of parents through the millions and billions of years of time, you will not want to be setting an alarm for yourself to wake up in the middle of the night. He is so stupid, and that is an understatement. Like I said, Chloe is going to this alternative school, but she really doesn't want to stay there after she has the baby. She thinks she can go back to her normal school, have a normal high school experience, and all is going to be hunky-dory. But her mom does not think that that is realistic or the right decision. So Chloe comes home this one night and her mom starts crying. Chloe starts crying. As much as Chloe wants to get credit for being smart and thinking things through, and she says she's not stupid, she knows what she's doing and being a teen mom, she really doesn't. And we know that because when we close the episode, she gives us a little, what is it, like the little couch time clip. And she says she doesn't want the fact of having a baby to ruin her last year of high school. Well, there you go. There's your confirmation that Chloe's mom is absolutely right. She needs to stick with the alternative school. Moving on to Lexis and Shaden, although we don't really get to see Shaden, it's more like Lexis and Kelsey. We learn that Kelsey has a boyfriend whose name is Maurice, who is 25, and I'm pretty sure he calls himself Marty Shore. He says about he and Kelsey that they goof off, have fun, and it's stress-free. And then something is on and popping. I'm not very good with the 20-something lingo, so I have no idea what that means. But I do know that stress-free cannot possibly be talking about Kelsey, because all Kelsey is talking about with Marty Shore at dinner, which I think is the same restaurant or looks awfully similar to the same restaurant that Janelle from Teen Mom 2 went to eat at with Jace, but that's a whole other story. I don't think Kelsey is stress-free at all, because all she talks about is Shaden and Lexis and getting diapers and wipes. Marty Shore could not have looked less interested, disconnected. He couldn't have cared less. You know what? Maybe he's a great guy. I hope he treats Kelsey kind, because I really like Kelsey. It seems like she's a hard worker. She did a great job raising her daughter. She was a teen mom herself. She's raising her granddaughter. It looks like she's paying for it all since Lexis doesn't have a job and she's in high school. So I give her a lot of credit. I want to see Kelsey with someone who can take care of Kelsey. But nevertheless, Kelsey wants to take care of more people, because now she's thinking that she wants to take custody of Scarlett away from Lexis and Shaden. Or maybe I shouldn't word it, take custody away. she just wants to have rights to or primary rights to Scarlett because she doesn't think that Lexis and Shaden have their shit together enough to take care of a child. All right, that's all we see of them. And now let's get to the bells of the ball, Michaela, Shannon, little bit of Kaylin, but we do get to see Queen Shelly. You know I love Shelly. She is a more beautiful Joan Cusack, and I think she is a great mom, and she looks like a great grandma changing a poopy baby diaper. Now let's remember that Michaela is going to be moving in with her mother, Shannon, even though her grandpa Tim and her grandma Cindy have raised her. Well, Shannon doesn't want Kaylin coming around that much. She's trying to get in between Kaylin and Michaela's relationship. And now Shelly's kind of sort of stuck in the middle too, because she's Kaylin's mom, she's Timmy's grandma, and also Michaela is going to her for advice and what I think she's probably venting to Shelly about Shannon, much like she probably vents about Shelly to Shannon. We find out things got pretty messy between all of these people because Michaela had texted Shelly and said Shelly can't have her grandson at her house anymore. She can only see baby Timmy at Tim and Cindy's house. Well, Shelly was totally shocked by that, and I can see that. I mean, you're going to let your own mother, Shannon, who didn't even raise you and your brother around your son, but all of a sudden now Shelly is the dangerous one. I don't see that at all. That was purely out of spite. But even so, Shelly agreed to make amends with Shannon. The two of them would get along so that Shelly could see her grandson when she wanted to see him. But now Kaylin and Michaela are in her living room and they're talking about this moving in with Shannon situation. Shelly is really towing the line here because she's giving Michaela advice, which Michaela is seeking, but she also can't say too much because she knows it's going to go back to Shannon. So Shelly just says, in my opinion, you know, it's always good in legal jargon, in my opinion, it's not fact. If you're paying to live in the basement, then it's your place and you can have Kaylin come and go because you're paying rent. It's your place. It's not as if you're living there with Shannon. It's her house, her rules, her bills. She's paying the mortgage. You're paying for your apartment. People can come and go in your apartment, whoever you want. Shelly is just like all of us. Who is going to charge your 17-year-old daughter full rent for a basement? It's not even a basement apartment, just the basement. Michaela even admits what Shelly is saying makes sense. The only difference between what everyone else is saying and what Michaela is saying is Shannon's intentions. Everyone else sees that Shannon's intention is either to drive a wedge between Kaylin and Michaela and or Kaylin and his son, or she needs Michaela's money in order to afford this place and she's having her move in purely for financial gain on her part. Michaela does not see any of that. Now we're going to fast forward to when Grandpa Tim and Grandma Cindy go to see the house where Michaela is supposed to be living soon. He's keeping his mind open. Maybe he's going to go. Maybe he's going to like it. Probably not. But he owes it to Michaela to at least go see. Shannon starts off by greeting them at the door with a like, hey, sorry, the lock's not working. Yet way to point out that the front door lock doesn't work. Brilliant idea. And then she brings them for a tour of the house. Mainly, we see her daughter's room. And I gotta tell you, I could not hide the disgust on my face. I think I looked exactly like Tim. He's looking around the room. There's bags of garbage. There's no sheets on the beds. The mattresses look disgusting. And Tim is pissed. Then he goes down to the basement, and I think he was so mad he couldn't even come up with words down there. He's not even situating himself around Shannon as she's giving a grand tour of the basement. It's obvious Shannon knows that that basement is a total dump, but she thinks that she can, you know, talk it up as if it is Ramona's newly renovated Upper East Side apartment. And she's like, oh my God, look at this bathroom. It's huge. It's bigger than our bathroom. And Grandma Cindy's like, yeah, how about the live wires hanging from the ceiling? And then we cut over to Grandpa Tim and he's stepping in dog shit on the floor. And then he's looking at these wires hanging off of, I don't know if it was a humidifier, a dehumidifier, a furnace, whatever the hell it was not up to code. There's no conduit in the ceiling for the electricity. I don't know a lot about that shit, but I know you should not have extension cords leading from one light to the other plugged into an outlet. And then what frickin' put me over the edge is that immediately Tim is like, wow, it's kind of cold down here. And Shannon's like, oh yeah, it'll warm up when we put the heat on. Well, anyone who has a basement will tell you, basements never heat up to the temperature of the rest of the house unless you have amazing insulation, layers of padding on the concrete floor. She's out of her mind. But what she says as her daughter is going ahead of her on the stairs is, it's a little chilly. Yeah, I don't want you down here. Oh, okay, Shannon. So you don't want your daughter down there just to walk around for a couple minutes, but it's okay to have your daughter, who is 17, pay $500 a month to live down there full time? Fuck off with that. Well, they get upstairs, and that's where Tim tells Shannon in no too few of words that he does not approve of the basement. Michaela is not living there. And Shannon, instead of talking it through logically, immediately goes to the defensive, the emotional, the, you know, you love my daughter more than me. We know that's what it is. That is the underlying thing of it. Because Shannon says, my mom and dad want everything perfect for Michaela and Timmy, and that's it, how they've always been, but my life isn't perfect. Okay, Shannon, it's not that they want everything perfect. And you know what? Even if they do want everything perfect for her, what is so wrong with that? They just want something that is not a dungeon for their grandson to be crawling around on that's filled with dog shit. They're not saying that she has to live in a 3,000 square foot townhouse or anything crazy like that. So long story short, Tim says he is not going to let this happen. Michaela is not living there. He's going to have to probably face the wrath of everyone, but it's not going to happen. So we'll see what happens next week. Apparently, baby showers are, quote, bisexual, and Michaela's $500 a month that she was going to be paying is just a little bit of an amount for utilities, according to Shannon. Very interesting. All right, after the jump, let's talk about some Teen Mom 2. Back from a week off because of the VMAs, we have Teen Mom 2 Reunion Part 2. We get some flashbacks of Reunion Part 1, thank goodness, because I really don't think I fully appreciated what Kale was saying during her segment talking about Brianna last time. Just to remind you, I didn't catch it the first time either, but she said, I'm just surprised by how everything went down here on stage, because when it was just the two of us, it was a completely different story. Well, yeah, Kale, it was a completely different story because you were acting like you were Mike Tyson about to take Brianna down when it was just the two of you. But then when it was on stage with Brittany and everyone else, you were running away like Bambi. So yeah, it was a little bit different because you ran away like a wimp. Don't get me wrong, I would have done the same thing, but for Kale talking a big game, she sure followed through like shit. But this week, we start out with Leah. Oh, Leah. I wonder if she gave her little brain a break before she went out on stage. You know, it's hard work. Maybe she blew off some steam by blowing some bubbles. Maybe watch some Baby Einstein for good measure, because, you know, it's good for the learnses. Well, flashback of Dr. Sal. We always got to have a Dr. Sal flashback. And then Allie's little creepy baby alive doll that thing scares the living shit out of me. Then there were lots of tears in Allie talk. Not to downplay it, but we've seen it all before. It's very predictable. Now, when Drew asked Leah what the prognosis is, this is Leah's direct quote. God, she's just so dumb. Quote, she'll continue to get weaker, her muscles, and all that stuff, yeah. All right, A for effort, D minus on the lip filler, because, man, those blown up lips were making forming words and sentences even more challenging for Leah, and it's already hard enough work. Now then Corey comes on, Nessa threw some softball questions about life and Miranda, and then Jeremy unexpectedly wasn't able to call in. I like to think that perhaps Gracie or Addie might have chewed through the dial-up wires or something and sabotaged Jeremy into probably telling us the full truth about what's going on currently. Then we get to a segment with Kale and Leah, just the two of them. I hated this segment. I'm starting to think maybe they just threw them together because they needed to fill time because Jeremy couldn't call in. They did have a photo of him up in the background, and I really hope that you caught a good look at it because it is a photo of him stretched out on a chaise lounge in the exact same position as George Costanza. I shit you not, go back and look. They did him no favors. And then Kale and Leah have this little girl talk moment about hooking up with their exes and their vacation plans. But then Kale gives us a list of her standards for guys she dates. Awfully picky for a chick that lives on Twitter and trolls her own colleagues, you know, her colleagues, her coworkers online. Now, in case you didn't know, Kale is trashing Janelle all over Twitter these days, calling her out on her abortions and being a trashy mom. There's a really great Twitter account. You got to check it out. She is just hilarious. I'm assuming she's a she. It's at Reality TV with a T. And she just retweets the best stuff. She calls these girls out on everything. It's amazing. Go and check it out. So thank you to Reality TV with a T for bringing my attention to Kale trolling Janelle. You know, it is awfully hypocritical of Kale considering she was the one pissed off about Brianna talking about her and her kids, saying, you know, they're on the same show and they're coworkers. They should have respect for one another. But then again, this is Kale, and Kale is always right. That was really the only moment when I really want to just knock Dr. Drew up on the side of the head and be like, hey, stop saying that because she really believes it. She's not in on the joke. Then Leah admits that she's dating some 39-year-old guy. I do remember seeing this come out a while back. I'm not still sure if she's with him. Now, of course, Kale cannot let Leah steal the spotlight talking about this new guy. So she lumbers her way into the conversation and says, oh, I approve. She is that bossy, annoying as hell friend. I probably am too, but this is Kale. And based on Kale's choosing history with men, that would be a hard swipe left or right or whichever direction means no. Because if Kale approves, that means 99.9% of us are going to say this guy is a massive loser. I question the guy altogether, even despite, him finding Leah intellectually stimulating, attractive, having a lot to offer, because Leah says that he's the type of guy that she can have a conversation with. Lord only knows what this 39-year-old man's SAT score would be if he and Leah have a lot to talk about. No, I'm not just going to say that and leave it hanging, because let's really think about this. What do these two talk about if they're still together? If they're not, what do you think they did talk about? I had a couple guesses. I think they talked about light, like, oh, it's sunny out or it's dark in this room. Maybe they were thirsty. They talked about getting something to drink. Something smells like air. Airplane. I like airplanes. Have you ever been on one? And of course, oh, squirrel. Not a lot to offer with either of them. And you know, all the while, Allie had to have been sitting there with these two on their dates or talking, just side-eyeing this moron and her mother texting Corey and Miranda about it. Like, guess what this bitch is up to tonight? Now let's jump to the next segment with Javi. I'm going to apologize again. I used to like Javi, I think even as recently as last season, but he's terrible. He's scummy. He's what I call slimy. He's just a buttery ball of ew. It was a lot of questions about, did you propose to Brianna or did you not? What happened to the ring? Too much of that questioning. We're past it. It's old news. It really doesn't matter. The only good thing to come out of that was hearing Dr. Drew say Javi is a shady motherfucker. Twice. Thank you, Queen Jesus. Amen. Now, Javi did have that weird mustache thing going on, and I couldn't stop staring at it with complete disgust. But even through that, I was able to figure out that he's got a new girlfriend, the same one that he had on deck in case Brianna broke up with him after she got her body rearranged by Dr. Miami. And now they're happy. Well, Javi says they're happy. They're together. This chick's pregnant with Javi's baby. And despite Drew telling him to his delusional face that he's either a love or a sex addict and that he's just desperate to have anyone as a partner, Javi smiles through it and is like, yeah, oh, okay. He's happy, and I just hope she's got a backbone and a steady job, because I don't think Javi is going to be on Teen Mom that much longer if Kale has anything to do with it. And speaking of Kale, she's back, and now it's Kale and Javi. It took the same willpower it takes me to turn down a Ketel One vodka tonic with extra limes not to fast forward through this segment. I cannot take these two separately, and together, it's exponentially worse. Kale's acting all self-righteous about being right all the time, again, thanks Dr. Drew, and how she doesn't remember how often she hooks up with Javi and when. Just stop right there, gross. None of us really want to know. Now, when Javi said Kale said, "Hey, let's go upstairs," and Kale smiled, I hope you saw what I saw. Her mouth looked like Brandy Glanville's Joker smile because of the amount of lip filler that she pumped into her face. I would put it on, I already talked vodka tonic, a box of Mariano's donuts that Kale and Leah, probably that annoying podcast sidekick, got some free hookup for Botox and filler, but they got super greedy with it and asked for like an extra 20 mls, I don't know, whatever amount it takes, but it was just too much. Now, then we get to Nathan and Barbara. I could listen to Barbara say she had lunch with Doris all day long. I am a Barbara fan. I can't help it, and I don't want to. She is not perfect, but she is a gem on Teen Mom. Now, then we have Nathan. That is a whole other story. The more he tries to speak with big words or sound smart, the more he just murders the English language in terms of phrases. For example, I have a lot of concerns of things happening at the household that I disapprove with. Okay, Nathan, just sit there, look shiny and crazy-eyed, and keep it that way, okay? Now, this dynamic duo lays out their theory that David is the mastermind and the controller of everything in that household, everything on the land, and Janelle. Nothing gets past David. Now, I do believe that David is controlling. I think we all agree he's just a sociopath, probably a psychopath too. But I don't think Janelle is this damsel in distress and she's a victim of his control because she, you know, she's just a doll when he's not around. No. Janelle is Janelle. We have seen her for years. She pulled a gun on a man with her kid in the car, for Christ's sake. She is not a saint. She probably burst into flames if she were to walk even on the same city block as a church. Then we get to see Janelle herself on location in North Carolina with Drew because, remember, she threw that temper tantrum and she wouldn't go to New York without David because MTV is not going to pay for David to be there and they're not going to be filming him. Now, Janelle's eyebrows, let's take a moment. They are on a journey again. They probably need maybe their own Instagram account of their adventures because those eyebrows have seen and experienced things that can only be shared through the documentation of photos. Now, Janelle says she's doing great, even a little smile, as Dr. Drew is explaining her season full of, quotes, fights, custody battles, road rage court, and her husband being fired by MTV. Oh, a little smiling Janelle, of course she is. But what stood out to Janelle when she's watching the flashbacks of all of that? That would be when Jay said that she and David are a piece of shit. Well, of course that stood out to her. It's not that she's alarmed that her son is swearing or concerned for his mental health that he's even speaking like that with a lack of empathy and spitting. No, she's pissed at Barbara because it's all Barbara's fault. She's such a fucking narcissist. Now, I'm going to apologize if I missed stuff here because I was seeing red during every moment Janelle was speaking. I know for a fact I am not the only one. When I went back last night, because my freaking DirecTV didn't record the reunion, it recorded some new Teen Mom 2 thing, which is bullshit. I'm not watching it. Unless they're my original moms, I'm not doing it. So I didn't see everything in real time. So I was seeing the things on Twitter that people were posting, and it was out of control. And I was like, oh shit, I can't wait for this. So here we are. Dr. Drew was saying how people are afraid of that David is going to kill everyone because he's got a gun collection. He clearly has some scary rage. Janelle's own children have told every single adult in their lives that they are afraid of David. Now, then Janelle freely admits that she has CPS called on her multiple times, in her words, every other month. Yet, you know, Jace is fine. His therapist thinks everything is just going great. They are just perfect. Bullshit. I would bet that Jace's therapist is likely, maybe not the only one, but one of the people calling CPS as well. It's anonymous, and Janelle and David are just assuming that it's Babs or Nathan, right? Maybe it is, but think about this. If Jace is telling his therapist that David and or Janelle are hitting him or Kaiser, that therapist has to call CPS. Or even Jace's teachers at school or Kaiser's daycare people. Even if Kaiser isn't saying anything, if they're seeing bruises and scratches and shit like that on his body, they are going to call. So fuck Janelle saying that everyone else is just out to get them. Maybe they're not out to get you. Maybe they just care more about your children than you care about them. She cares actually more about David's feelings and his hurt feelings than anyone else. And this was especially apparent when Dr. Drew called her out on David's comments about being racist and homophobic. And Janelle is just, oh God, she can't even say too much about it because he was clearly so wrong, right? The only thing she can say is David regrets how he called people out. I'm not going to even touch the offensive language he used with a 10-foot pole because it's totally disgusting and offensive, but he's sorry for how he said it. But he still stands by his views. Okay, so he's an unapologetic piece of shit. He doesn't hate those people. He just doesn't want his kids to be like those people. You know, totally relatable, right, guys? Just like, you know, some of us parents don't want our kids to be doctors. We want them to go into the military instead. Yeah, totally understandable. God, she is just such a horrible human being. But you know what? Maybe Janelle needs to hear this. Janelle, you're right. Some dads, you know what? They are like that. Some dads are pieces of shit who are so ignorant that they hate themselves so much that they have to hate other people to make their tiny, tiny brains and tiny, tiny dicks think that they're fit to participate in society with the rest of us. But no, no, thank you. Nope, seat's taken. We don't want you either. Go on your land, David and Janelle. Talk to your gun collections and your dead sod. Well, now let's talk about Janelle's road rage incident. Janelle goes on this sob story about how she suffered from PTSD for 2 weeks and she didn't leave her house. Tell that to people who truly have PTSD from things that they didn't bring on and create for themselves. Dr. Drew asked Janelle if she ever thought about Jace when, you know, she decided to follow the guy on the road. And Janelle responds, I didn't think about that. I just thought about how he almost knocked my son out. You didn't think about that? This is exactly why she should not have children in her care. She doesn't think about them ever. And about Jace almost getting knocked out, no, he didn't. And if he did, It's because he should have been properly restrained in the back seat, you frickin' shit for brains, Janelle. Now, Dr. Drew was holding Janelle slightly more accountable than he has in the past, and I don't know why this one part stood out to me, but it did. Janelle was talking about the 911 operator, how the operator told her to stay put, but she ignored her and kept on following the guy because, quote, she knew I was mid-driving. How am I supposed to stay put? And Dr. Drew goes, well, you pull over. It's a car. You go to the side of the road. I was beyond thrilled. I have my hands like up on the side of my head right now. The exact same thing I did when he said that, because I was like, oh, finally, the moment has come when someone calls her on a very specific thing that she is wrong on. But of course, it goes right over Janelle's vapid head because now it's the 911 dispatcher's fault. Someone trained in dispatching and directing people in order to have them stay alive just fucked up. Yeah, okay, sure. Maybe Janelle should train emergency response personnel now, right? Because she thinks everything should be black and white, not gray. Or rather, maybe it should be just white because David doesn't like black or gray. Oh, and don't worry about the whole lying to Jace and telling him to lie to Meme thing, because Janelle's got it all handled, guys. She told him that she lied because she just doesn't want to get arrested for something stupid. You know, pulling a gun and threatening to kill someone, that would be all your fault, Jace, if Mommy went to jail because you snitched. Damn, I really think we need to get this GoFundMe for Jace's therapist in order because whoever she is, she deserves at least double her salary for dealing with this family. Little PSA before we move on, if you live in and around Janelle's vicinity, steer clear because she carries a gun at all times and she's all too proud about it. And also, little props to Dr. Drew for throwing in the digs about having to take so many planes to North Carolina because Janelle was being a spoiled little bitch of a daughter. Lastly, we get to Chelsea. Princess Chelsea is Skyping in because she's pregnant and she doesn't want to be on stage with the show that's provided her the easy and comfortable lifestyle that affords her her extensions and her eyelash extensions and her spray tan. I'd add Botox to the list, but we know that she gets it for free in the back of Randy's office. Really no news to report from Chelsea. Same shit with Adam. Cole is great. They're a happy family. Pinterest perfect. After the break, stick around because we have Married at First Sight. Married at First Sight. Oh, day 24. And my first thought? Oh, shit. It's fantasy week, and up first are Bobby and Danielle. These two, they are just so boring. Cool idea with the scratch-off map thing, but I mean, do we really need to spend a full 5 minutes on it? No. And why didn't one of them get some books or something to keep the edges of that map down instead of having Bobby leaning over her like a total weirdo? And must we see him in his underwear? We get the idea that it's bedtime. I would much rather the Star Spangled Banners overseeing Bobby in anything less than a snowsuit. Well, it is fishbowl night. I usually like fishbowl night just for even just the cringe factor. But when Bobby and Danielle did it, nothing has ever been more boring. Bobby likes Danielle's eyes and lips, and Danielle doesn't like talking about sex, at least on camera. I really don't blame her on this one, actually. She's a little prissy, but I get it. I think these questions are way too personal to expect these couples to actually answer them in front of the world. Next up, we had Amber and Dave. I've said it before, I don't think these two are suited for each other. Amber is outspokenly, how do I want to say this? Just insecure. And Dave is outspokenly controlling. I have to say I agree with him about Amber's hair, though. If your hair is falling out and breaking off because you're dyeing it too much, you gotta lay off the dye or go to a different stylist who has a more gentle solution for you. But on the other hand, I do understand what Amber is saying. If she likes her hair blonde, then Dave's just got to lay off. Now then we get to me and Tristan. They are the saving grace of this season because they are the only ones that bring some sort of plot twist. Now they're going out for this, what's supposed to be easy breezy lunch with Mia's sister and Mia's dad. But Mia pretty much sits down and says, oh, we're moving to Houston within the first minute. Now her sister, we saw her at the wedding, she's there again and she goes in on Tristan like a freaking Mack truck. Why would you move? Oh, so your business is more important than your relationship? That's not cool. And then she kept on saying, I don't get it. I mean, I don't get it. Well, guess what, Deirdre or Dee Dee, whatever your name is, it's not for you to get. It is their relationship and they are grown adults. So what is Mia doing during this confrontation? Because that's really what it was. She's just sitting there with that stupid, innocent look on her face, covering up her mouth with her fingers and folding into herself. She does not step in to tell her sister to just like, shut the fuck up. She doesn't even say, hey, lay off, or jump in to even answer some of the questions. She does ask Tristan one thing, and that's after his sister has torn him a new asshole, and she asks him if he feels uncomfortable. Loud enough, however, for the waitresses and her dad and her sister to hear. How uncomfortable was it for that one waitress that was just standing at their table? And then Tristan has to answer, right? And he's like, yeah, I'm uncomfortable. And then what does she do? She turns right to her sister and her dad and is like, guys, Tristan's uncomfortable, so can you stop? This is like every uncomfortable moment that you have as a child when you're at your friend's house and you're like, can we have something to eat in your kitchen? Okay, maybe it was just me. But then your friend goes and asks her parents and been like, hey, Jody's hungry over here. She's a huge fat ass. Can she have something from the fridge? And you're like, no, you're supposed to say that. We were hungry. That's how Tristan's feeling, I'm guessing. So needless to say, I am with him. Mia should have stepped up and spoken up. It's her freaking family, and she did throw Tristan under the bus. So fast forward to the two of them. They're home now after this lunch, and they're arguing because Mia did exactly what Tristan said. He had great wording with it. He got straight to the point. Of course, Mia doesn't like hearing it, but he's right. She dropped this bomb about them moving to Houston, and then she didn't tell him to back off. Now, Mia says, in a moment that Tristan and I both had the exact same reaction, we just started shaking our heads and threw our hands up. And she said, well, you know my family. No, he doesn't know your family. He barely knows you. It has been exactly 25 days since you met. How the hell would he know your family? And I agree with him that she is a total baby. I have a feeling that her family really babies her and babied her in the past based on how her sister was just speaking for her, and it wasn't really even overprotective. It was just overbearing. And Tristan is saying that he felt like he had to baby her and take the lead in the conversation with her family. And she really should have just been a big girl and speak your mind, talk like an adult at this table. Mia clearly has a lot of issues, but there's a new one that I've noticed. Besides the closed off body language and hiding behind her hair and her clothes, it's that you only see her bottom row of teeth when she talks. I think that and the Runaway Bride, remember that one? And kind of like the Ramona eyes, if you are not old enough to remember the Runaway Bride thing. Those two things are a dead giveaway of a true wackadoo. Now, we're not done yet because we get another Girls' Day, Boys' Day. Man, they love those down in Texas. So here we have the ladies first. They're getting pedicures in a very interesting nail salon. They have like these big fabric chairs with cushions and everything. Yeah, it looked comfortable, but the germ factor to me, what's flying in the air ending up in those cushions, I don't even want to know. But anyway, Mia is saying that she and Tristan are having a hard time. Well, I wonder what that might be about. Is it about your lying Mia or anything? No. She says it's because Tristan raises his voice when they're having arguments. Yeah, sure, that's it. That's why you're having problems. Now, Amber is also having problems that she's sharing, and she says she's mad because Dave doesn't support her in her crispy hair journey. And Amber is skeptical of Danielle's picture-perfect marriage. There must be some kind of skeletons in her closet. Dun, dun, dun. Now, that paired with the little teaser with Bobby later certainly had all of us on the edge of our seats. So let's see what happened with that. Well, it's boys' day out and they're golfing, and man, oh man, my man was loving this scene because he used to be a golf pro, and this is the one thing he's a judgy bitch about on TV, and I live for these rare moments. Now, according to my pro, Tristan is horrible at golfing. Bobby clearly plays and he's got a good swing, and Dave has, quote, a decent swing. So there you go. Now then, Bobby starts kind of choking on his words about how marriage is going, and we're all thinking, oh God, here we go. What's the secret? What's going on behind closed doors? Dave is saying, come on, Bobby, what is it? And then we go to commercial, of course. Now then we come back, and what is it? What is it? What's that, Lassie? Oh, you're falling in love. Great. No plot twist. Boring. Then Tristan recaps the lunch where he got ambushed. Dave voices his concerns once again about Amber's insecurity. And then he felt the need to fill us in on their sex life, that they have sex every night and most mornings. Ugh. No one needs to know that. He could have just said, we have a great level of intimacy with each other. We don't need to know the details. But to take my disgust to an even higher level, we get Dr. Jessica arriving to help Dave and Amber out. You better hang on to your man, Amber, because Dr. Jessica just might make you a villain, just like she did to Molly last season, and end up close and cozy to Dave. That is, if she's going to leave John for him. Yeah, in case you aren't following Twitter these days, man, I'm talking about Twitter a lot today. Those two are awfully cozy, and I think they're together. Ew. Now, what did Dr. Jessica say to them exactly? Something about feeling safe. I don't know. Ask the sister wives about it. They are all about the safety rules. They're total experts on this shit. Now, day 29, sexual fantasy time. We learn that Amber wants to be surprised and feel special. So Dave tells her to get dressed up, leaves her a little note, meet me by the butcher shop, and then he comes around the corner with roses and a horse-drawn carriage. I despise this. It is the complete opposite of what I consider a romantic evening, but she loves it. They're all lovey-dovey, and then he says, you smell so good, but it's almost overpowering. And then we get the dun-dun-dun and the zoom in on Amber's face. She does go stiff as a board, and we hear in her voiceover, she says, why would he say that? Oh my God. It's being beaten into our heads over and over and over again how insecure Amber is. I am too, but you gotta have a sense of humor about it. And ultimately, Amber does make a little joke. At least she's trying. And then yay for a rooftop dinner and little butt squeezes. It was actually the first time I think I've seen Dave kind of giggle and smile, and he looked happy. So maybe they will be happily married after this experiment. I still have my doubts, though. Now, what about Danielle and Bobby? Danielle says Bobby likes girls in hats, so she found a hat and she straightened her hair. That's about it. Okay, then Mia has a donut fantasy. So do I. However, mine does not involve anyone feeding them to me. I really don't want anyone even around me. I would rather be alone with no judgment when I shovel down my favorite donuts down my fat gullet. But Mia gets Tristan being all cheesy and suspenders and funny shorts. And this may be an unpopular opinion here. I've said before, I get more of a friend vibe between these two. And I think Tristan doing the funny guy shtick with the suspenders and the printed boxer briefs. I think it was kind of a defense mechanism. I have a really hard time believing that they actually went into the bedroom with those donuts and they got it on. There's just something about it. I don't sense a true falling in love connection. Now, next week, we see their 1 month anniversaries. Oh my God, a whole 30 days. Well, until then, that's about it. Thank you for tuning in. Please remember to subscribe and leave a 5-star review on iTunes. I am going to, do something if I can get to 400 reviews on iTunes. So please head on over there and say some nice words. Help me spread all the snarky goodness. Remember to hit me up and let me know if you're going to be in the Irvine area this Friday, August 31st. I would love to have a cocktail with you. But if you can't, I understand. Just make sure you keep in touch on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Reality TV Pod. And until next week, stay salty.